This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah, because while this Q&A with Layla is pre-recorded, I'm told that it's going to drop on Christmas Day. So those of you who have a little extra leisure time on your hands,
hopefully you unwrap your gifts.
Yeah, it's like we're going to give you the gift of Intelligent Medicine for 45 or 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And hopefully that'll set you on a path towards 2020. Layla's with me. Layla Mudin's our nutritionist in residence. And together we do our weekly Q&A with Layla. So as we head towards near's end, season's greetings. It's been a great year. And
yes,
we've gotten a lot of information out to our audience. Lots of appreciative comments. Thank you for sending those comments, because those always encourage us to strive to access the information that you feel is germane to your health.
Yes.
The place to send questions, and you can start sending questions in anticipation of 2020, load up our email box, radioprogram@AOL.com. That's the usual destination for questions for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Before we get to questions, though, here's an interesting article out of Science Daily. And what it has to do with is a unique phenomenon in the 21st century, which is, you know, the world used to be divided between the haves and the have-nots. You know, as I was growing up, they said, you know, clean your plate because people are starving in Europe. Well, people aren't really.
Me too. I got that a lot.
People aren't starving in Europe anymore. But it was, you know, I was a post-war baby,
right,
and Europe was still pretty banged up.
Yeah.
And in the 1950s.
Yeah.
But now Europe is prosperous. But there's always a place where people are starving.
I used to hear, "Clean your plate," because there are children starving in Bangladesh.
Right. So I'm not sure how me becoming obese was going to help those kids.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, that was. it's like.
Right.
You know. You know, I already knew that there was some faulty logic there. And,
sure,
you know, this,
sure.
But this may be why I distrust authority, is getting messages like that.
You know what? Psychologically, because we both heard that growing up,
yeah,
it could kind of, you know, overeating feels unpleasant.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that kind of adversity primed us for our professions or primed us against being big as houses or anything like that. Interestingly.
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't call it force feeding. You know, my father would he wouldn't stand over me and finish that or whatever. You know, of course, if I couldn't finish it, I wasn't going to finish it. But he would remind me and nudge me that children were starving in Bangladesh.
I had an early priming experience. This is, we're getting away from the original article, but it's Christmas, so, you know, we can digress. My grandmother and they would speak Yiddish. And when I was being fed, they would say, "Eat this." And they would use the phrase, "It's a shtick gesint," which means literally, it's a piece of health.
Ah.
And so early on, a piece, and it's a nice expression in Yiddish because it's like, it sort of encapsulates the view that food is source of health.
Yeah,
you know, and so, you know, maybe that was how the message is. Anyway, so coming back to the story, headline, more than one in three low and middle income countries face both extremes of malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was, I was situating this article, first time in human history that you can have simultaneously obesity and malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be you'd have the haves and the have-not. You'd have the people who were, you know, emaciated or, you know, with kwashiorkor or, you know, stick-like arms and legs.
Marasmus.
And then you would have the obese Westerners who had a surfeit of food.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way it was.
Yeah.
Until the, you know, the late 20th century, when we have simultaneously obesity and malnutrition. So here's how that works. In this story, they say that being undernourished or overweight are no longer separate public health issues. They can occur simultaneously. And this is also not just a problem in the impoverished parts of the United States. It's a problem globally. They say that global estimates suggest that almost 2.3 billion children and adults are overweight. And more than 150 million children are stunted. So, well, okay, stunted is one thing, but this points to the possibility that you could be obese, but malnourished.
Yes.
Bereft of certain key nutrients, but still with a surfeit of empty calories.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was reading another article about an outfit called Dollar General. Now, if you wanted to buy a hot stock around 2015, you should have picked up Dollar General because they have thousands and thousands of stores that
Family
are like
Dollar General,
which are like quick, cheap groceries.
Everything's a dollar, right?
Well, approximately, you know, it's like cheap, but it's basically dry goods and preserved foods. There's not a lot. Or hardly any fresh food. I think you can get milk and eggs.
Milk, eggs, but crackers,
maybe
canned foods.
And canned foods.
Yeah.
And that is partly a consequence of the pullback of big supermarkets and the decline of small privately owned groceries in the sort of hinterland.
Yeah.
And we call this the food deserts of America.
Right, right.
So the outskirts of like major metropolitan areas, you know, like Atlanta or something like that. You know, yeah, downtown Atlanta, you know, you got the Whole Foods, you got the, you know, Trader Joe's, you got, you know, the gourmet, right? Mm-hmm. But then you go 30 miles outside there or, you know, 40 miles outside there in the outlying sprawl, you know, which is suburban or semi-rural.
Yeah.
And what you got is lots and lots of highways and strip malls and every, you know, you jump in the car and you can go, you know, a mile or two to your Dollar General.
Yeah.
Or, because you can't walk anymore.
No, you got to drive and you go to the drive-thru.
But, you know, you don't want to drive, you know, 20 miles to the nearest supermarket. I mean, maybe, you know, one foray per week.
Yeah.
But, you know, gas is expensive and, you know, people are living close to the line.
Right,
so this is where people now subsist.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that stock is a phenomenal stock to have, Dollar General. And it, you know, it's unfortunately a major food source for a lot of Americans.
That's true.
And it's, you know, high calorie, very low fiber, lots of preservatives, lots of chemicalized food.
Yes.
And that's what is going on now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and, you know, and here we are, we have a health crisis. It's costing us a lot of money. Medicare, you know, going broke. You know, we're looking for solutions to our healthcare crisis.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe it's really a matter of fundamental economics and food delivery that is at the basis of that. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I'm, you know, a charter member of the American Nutrition Association, which just launched. You know, you'll be hearing more about it because I'll post frequently about it on social media and I'll be talking to some of the people who are developing this concept. But it really is, I think, one of the ways that we can have a fundamental impact on the health of Americans.
Yes. Wonderful.
And potentially internationally, because, you know, I was at the conference and there are people from all over the world coming interested in this initiative. But, you know, somebody who's overfed is not necessarily well-nourished.
That's true. If they're eating empty calories or anti-nutrients,
right,
like white flour, sugar, refined carbs, you know, additives, preservatives, things that actually take a toll on your body, on your liver, absolutely. So, yeah, it is possible to be overweight and undernourished.
Yep.
No longer was it LBJ? Was it somebody that looked at somebody and said, well, stop eating so much or something? Looked at a fat person and said, well, stop eating all that food.
Not that he was svelte.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. Right. But no, it's an interesting phenomenon. Yeah. But given that food should deliver health, that Yiddish saying?
A shtick gesint.
A shtick gesint.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well said.
Very deliberate, nice, hard sounding.
Right. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful language. It conveys so much meaning. And, you know.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. And this continues because the overweight obesity crisis is not dying down.
No.
At all.
No.
So, yeah. On that note,
let's get to questions.
Let's talk about heart failure.
As people, as people unwrap their Christmas,
right?
What's like the worst Christmas present you can get? One of those cakes that are like with the
fruit cake that gets regifted every year. That's probably as heavy as a bowling ball or something.
Right?
Like that.
Yeah. It's a deadly weapon.
Exactly. We have an email from RB. I realize this may be like bringing coals to Newcastle.
I love that expression.
Yeah. But I found this August 2019 study that throws statins under the bus. Sending it your way because you helped me in the past and thought it might be helpful for you to have.
Okay.
It includes this conclusion.
Right.
In patients receiving long-term statin therapy, statin-associated cardiomyopathy may develop that responds
safely. A definition is cardio, heart. Yeah. Myopathy means muscle damage.
Yeah, heart failure.
Which results in heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swelling of the ankles and shortness of breath and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Responds safely to discontinuing that statin treatment and starting CoQ10 supplementation. What have you been doing for years and years and years and years to anybody who's been on a statin? You must take CoQ10.
Yeah.
You must take it.
Right. And so actually, we did a podcast specifically on that topic.
Great.
So go back and find the podcast that we did with Dr. Peter Langgen, L-A-N-G, Langsjoen, Langsjoen. It's a Norwegian name, I think, and that's why it's got a weird spelling.
Yeah.
So Peter Langgen is the son of Per Langgen, who died, I think, in the 90s, who was one of the originators of CoQ10 therapeutically for heart problems.
Oh, okay.
And he is a cardiologist. The son became a cardiologist, too, and he is sort of, now he's, you know, nearly my age, and he's carrying on in his father's tradition doing coenzyme Q10 research. And he's also one of the original proponents of ubiquinol as a more bioavailable, effective form of CoQ10 as a delivery system.
Yeah.
And what he published a paper, in fact, on this very subject, which is that if you, first of all, there's an epidemic of congestive heart failure. We're doing a little better at preventing heart attacks and people are surviving heart attacks.
Yeah.
But when people, partially because of that, you know, people, you know, used to, you know, have a heart attack and that was like endgame. Now we can save them through very heroic efforts in the hospital. But they come out with weakened heart muscle because some of the heart muscle is killed. They have literally a lack of circulation to the heart muscle and it dies, just like in a stroke. It's like a stroke of the heart.
So
the net result is the heart doesn't pump very efficiently. So we have these people who survive. They're older. They're, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s and beyond. And they have... they're constantly going to the hospital for congestive heart failure, and they get, you know, they get diuresed and tuned up, and they get sent back out. I can't tell you, you know, we would when I, even like 30, 40 years ago when I was being in, when I was in my training, I trained in the Bronx. And the Bronx, in this part of the Bronx, was very close to a lot of nursing homes, the elderly, and a lot of predominantly Jewish nursing homes, because the Bronx, you know, was the center of Jewish life in New York. And so, you know, we would get, you know, Bertha, you know, or, you know, Edna, you know, people, or Pearl, you know, age 92, you know, and I would look at the chart and the chart would say, this is the 21st admission for congestive heart failure for Pearl Beanstalk, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, because they would just in and out of the hospital, and we'd tune them up and send them out, and they'd come back, you know, in a couple of weeks, and, you know, back and forth and back and forth. Not, and since I've been in my residency training, there have not really been major breakthroughs in the treatment of congestive heart failure. But the difference is that we didn't have statins then. Now, almost all these heart patients are on statins. And it's really worth looking at whether the statins are causing the heart failure, because they deplete the coenzyme Q10, which is known to be associated with the pumping action of the heart muscles. And Dr. Langen's paper, he took a series of patients off statins and gave them CoQ10, and it tuned them up. And they weren't, you know, they weren't suffering from congestion. Their walking ability, their endurance was improved. Their their water retention and their
ankles. Has been an increase in congestive heart failure since the introduction of statins, is is my understanding. So it is very interesting that that occurs.
That's a very real
Here's
phenomenon.
More. And this is actually a very recent study where they looked at about 142 people, and those receiving long-term statin therapy with statin-associated cardiomyopathy, they found that discontinuing the statin treatment and adding CoQ10 was very, very beneficial. And this is a recent study. Ah, Elena Langsgen.
There we go. There we go.
Peter Langsgen. I'm looking. Jens, the whole family.
Yeah,
the
because
whole family. Right.
It's now it's looking a third. They're carrying it on to a third generation. Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh, terrific. Okay. Terrific.
So that's the study I was talking about.
Right. RB, thank you very much for sending that along to us. As it turns out, you've got it covered.
So coals were delivered to Newcastle, but it's okay. We, you know,
we still appreciate it.
But
it's cold out.
It's a fossil fuel. We've got to figure out, you know, maybe we can, let's switch to solar and wind.
Right, right. Oh, my goodness. Okay, we have an email from Bob. Bob is age 66. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I was told I have ileocecal valve syndrome. My doctor told me there is no fix for the valve and treats the resulting bacterial problems with antibiotics.
Okay.
Do you know if there's an alternative?
Okay,
therapy?
So this is interesting. Is what the ileocecal valve is, it's basically a valve that permits food to go from the small intestine down into the large intestine.
Yes.
But it's a valve, and valves that work correctly should not allow for the reflux of things back up. So what is, I mean, the presumption is that because he has, it sounds like he has SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, where there should be some bacteria in the small intestine, but far fewer, far fewer than there are in the other parts.
Of the large intestine,
where the bacteria are supposed to reside. That's proper. But when you get bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine, that's why it's called SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. That is the source of gas, bloating, diarrhea, or alternatively constipation, and it's a major cause of IBS. So anyway, the thought is that if the valve was competent, it would keep the bacteria out. And there's now probably a test to look at the ileocecal valve because it's a functional problem. It's not like you're going to see it. It's like an MRI is not going to show it, or, you know, an ultrasound or imaging is not going to show it. But there's going to be some, you know, bacterial overgrowth, which can be proven with that breath test, the hydrogen methane breath test, which we perform. And then antibiotics are administered. So the doctor is saying there's nothing that can be done. That may well be the case because it's a functional problem. It's not like you can, you know, do surgery and replace the valve. The valve is a muscular structure. But, you know, chiropractors do an adjustment to adjust your ileocecal valve.
Yeah.
And what they do, and I've actually had it done, they press on the lower right side of your abdomen and, you know, do something to release the spasm or something.
Right. I actually watched a patient administer it to himself after learning it from a chiropractor.
Oh, okay.
This is over 10 years ago. Now, and it solved a lot of problems for him.
Well, so
thankfully,
it may relieve pain. It may. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's going to prevent the reflux of bacteria up into the small intestine. So you know there are natural things that have an antispasmodic effect that may be helpful. Things like peppermint.
Yeah. It's also antimicrobial. So
and it's antimicrobial too.
You know, because being treated over and over for the bacterial problems with antibiotics is a problem in itself.
So how about a diet change?
Yeah,
how about
diet change.
The low FODMAP diet.
Candibactin,
which is a product we use.
Biocidin.
Yeah, candibactin, which is, there are two versions. One is with aromatic herbs like oregano and rosemary and some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the AR. And the BR is made mostly with berberine.
Yes. Yes, and some other oils and things which are important. There's also other treatments, of biocidin. So we have alternative treatments for those who require something a little more individual. Alimax.
Right, which is a powerful
garlic.
Garlic. Yeah.
Garlic is like a natural antibiotic anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So is rosemary. Oregano, rather. So that's actually helpful. So, Bob, rather than being treated with antibiotics over and over, you might benefit from a more herbal therapy, a change in the diet, certainly. And yeah, that's very interesting. I haven't, you know, I've rarely heard it discussed about the ileocecal valve dysfunction or syndrome in many years now.
But you know, there's a lot to it because what causes SIBO, you know, it could be overuse of antibiotics, it could be a bad diet, it could be proton pump inhibitors that promote the overgrowth of harmful bacteria. It could be, you know, previous surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
But one cause of it, you know, is what's called dysmotility, which is, you know, improper peristalsis. And sometimes that's called gastroparesis.
Oh, yeah.
But
low motility.
Low motility, mm-hmm. which is not something that's so much fixed with medications. There have been many medications that have been tried for it, but many of them have side effects.
Yeah.
And they've been withdrawn from the marketplace. These are antispasmodic medications or, in some cases, pro-motility agents that promote peristalsis.
Yeah.
But some of these have really not done well. They've had adverse side effects. So there are certain herbs that have a carminative effect.
Yes.
That is a pro-motility effect, you know, that seem to relieve spasm but also promote normal peristalsis. That's part of the tradition.
Like peppermint.
Peppermint, does that,
example.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But carminative herbs seem to work on that. You know, there's even some evidence that erythromycin at low doses does that. It's an antibiotic.
Yeah.
But a very low dose, like 50 milligrams of erythromycin, is a promotility agent. Pantothenic acid is a promotility agent,
too. Oh, really?
There's some research that shows that, you know, people, one of the problems when you have some kind of GI surgery is they don't let you go home unless you've gone to the bathroom. You know, you've had a bowel movement. Because you might obstruct.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, you've gone to the bathroom, kaboom, you're gone.
Right,
you know,
go
home now. But that
things are working.
It costs the hospital a lot to keep patients waiting for them to go to the bathroom.
Right.
So
right.
In some research, they actually administered high-dose pantothenic acid to some patients to see if they could promote motility with pantothenic acid. That's one of the things. I mean, it's a weak promotility agent. So that, you know, the idea is, you know, if you think of an arrow pointing downward in your gastrointestinal tract, you want to keep things moving in that direction.
Yes.
Not like turning around and the arrow starts pointing up where there's reflux back up into your small intestine. Mm-hmm. So these promotility agents basically keep things moving.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the future, I think we may have, you know, like we have heart pacemakers, we may be mm-hmm. able to develop GI pacemakers for people with really severe gastroparesis mm-hmm. Or severe constipation that sort of wake up the gastrointestinal tract to have this normal pulsating motion called peristalsis to, wow. to produce elimination and to wow. move things downward mm-hmm. and away from the small intestine. Mm. That technology, I'm sure they're working on it, but it's almost like coming up with an artificial brain because there's more nerve cells in the gastrointestinal tract,
like
I hear.
Pacemaker for the GI tract.
Than in the brain.
Yeah.
You know, it's
isn't that
like
something?
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Like 90% of serotonin in the gut.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Where's
your brain?
Your brain is
the
like...
The ancient brain is the gut. That
yeah.
gut feeling when you're in danger, but you don't consciously know or understand mm-hmm. what is causing the danger, but it's that gut feeling
yeah.
that we all need to kind of pay attention to.
So
unless
you, so,
we're very paranoid.
So there's it in a way it's a form of neuropathy of the gastrointestinal
yeah.
tract or dysfunction
yeah.
of the intestinal nervous system
mm-hmm.
that can maybe in the future corrected with a pacemaker electronically.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting
yeah.
stuff.
But we're not, it's so complicated that, you know, we're able to give people, you know, artificial legs that walk robotically, but we can't do that with the GI tract yet. It's interesting.
Not yet.
It's working on it. All right. So that's a long discourse on an interesting question. All right. Let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. What's coming up next?
Oh, my son is 5 years old with a whole host of issues. Might you be able to help him?
Okay. We'll tackle that when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and we'll be right back with more of today's Q&A with Layla. It's our weekly Intelligent Medicine podcast.